ゴジラが近づいております。警備隊の指示に従って避難してください。
Welcome to Tokyo Lives, a Giant Monsters podcast where the host truly believes something will rise from the depths and destroy us all. I'm Cameron.
I'm Ra.
And I'm Kyle.
And today we're talking about Beasts from 20,000 Fathoms.
Ooh.
Ooh. Getting creepy with it.
It just sounds good, right?
That was a really good. Yeah, that was a good read. That was a good.
Part of what I like about this movie so much is that it's one of those, like, you know, the thing from beyond space terror. Like, I like.
Definitely that classic 50s. Line.
I like titles where it's four words and it's the X from Y.
It's perfect.
But before we, you know, ramble on about this movie and a lot of other things that have nothing to do with this movie, we got some news.
As always, I will lead us through most of the news here. So, first big piece of news is a game that has disappeared from our radars for a while now. Got some new screenshots and a release date or a release time frame in Japan.
Oh, the disaster game?
Yes.
Yeah.
See, it disappeared from your mind, not mine. Every day I wake up and I stare at, like, the few screenshots that we had for Shadows of...
City Shrouded in Shadows.
City Shrouded in Shadows.
He did it.
There Yay. We go. I'm going to cut out everything you just said. And
no,
just,
you're not.
So that I cut in, and it sounds like I said it because I'm smart.
Rob's on top again.
Anyway, so with the release window, we also got some extra monsters that we didn't know were going to be in it that are now in it. So the full list is Ultraman, Nisei Ultraman,
Ooh.
Alien Zarab, Godzilla, King Ghidorah, Evangelion Unit 1, The Fourth Angel, Gamera, and Legion.
That is a...
What?
That now, tone is jumping all over the place.
Now, here's the thing. This is something to remember. It's kind of unfortunate, but I understand why they're doing it. None of these monsters will appear outside of their universes. So Godzilla and King Ghidorah will appear in a level together, but Godzilla and Gamera won't cross over. There's not going to be any weird... cool crossover stuff. You're not gonna see Ultraman fighting Godzilla.
I would love to see Ultraman fight one of the angels from Evangelion.
That would be pretty cool.
It would be cool.
Things would get real heavy for him real fast.
I'm excited about the whole just the aspect of what this game is. So for the audience members that have no idea what the game is at all, you're going to be survivors during a monster attack or a monster battle going on. So you're going to be on the boots on the ground, as we always say on the cast. you're going to play as either a male character or the female character, and you're going to be leading the other through the wreckage, trying to survive this attack, trying to get away, trying to get to the military, trying to get out of there, while the monsters are destroying stuff around you.
Do we know if it's just going to be, like, episodic?
It's where... what it sounds like.
Unless, literally, like, it's like, oh no, Godzilla and King Ghidorah have been fighting, and oh, it's terrible, and you make it through the level, and then it's like, the next day, Ultraman just showed up, oh my god!
The next day, honey, let's move.
So, supposedly, there is a fifth Giant Shadow, is what they're called, that is appearing that we have no idea about. I don't think it's from a series. I think it's their own for the game. The article describes it as a highly mobile giant shadow from a fifth work will appear. So I guess maybe it is actually from something.
Yeah, fifth work.
Fifth work
sound
sounds
like a,
from something else.
It's a fire dragon.
It's a fire dragon from the monsters. The game is 75% complete. It is only coming out on the PS4. We have no idea if it is coming out in America, obviously. However, if we get word that it isn't coming out in America, one of us will import it. We'll probably just go in on it together, I'm assuming, and all play it and see what it's like.
We can combine our powers.
100% for sure. We will Voltron that.
Yeah, because this sounds super exciting. It's supposed to come
Voltron.
Voltron would never destroy the city.
Well, it's highly mobile, though. I don't know.
Voltron can book, man.
Super well, mobile. Yeah, I guess.
He turns into five cats.
But it does
What's
say
more mobile
But it does
than
say
that?
One creature, so I'm thinking if it is one, it would just... If it's Voltron, it would just be literally just Voltron. Well, like,
that just poked a bunch of holes in my theory.
I want it to be a monster that none of us recognize.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. From like a really like something from like Gridman that we haven't seen in years.
It's gonna be Pulgasari or Shin Pulgasari.
Pulgasari.
Trying to see a little bit more about the game. You're going to be able to customize your character a little bit. There's no plans for downloadable content at this time. So it's also being made by Bandai Namco, so it's going to be similar to Godzilla PS4.
Ooh.
I would assume.
Could be a Gundam?
Maybe. Might be a Gundam. May not be big enough, though. Well, I mean, then again, highly mobile, that fits a Gundam.
Yeah. Who's going to fight the guy? If they put in a Gundam, they'll have to put in a Zaku for him to fight.
Yeah,
I mean, it could just be a single Gundam.
Also, that's a lot smaller than all the other critters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
not if it's, what was it from G Gundam? Darkness Gundam?
The Dark Gundam.
The Dark Gundam.
Oh, yes,
which can be the Gundam. Size of the world.
Anyway, so the game is supposed to come out towards the end of the year. I think there was a specific date, but I'm... Yeah, due out this fall is all it says. So, it's very interesting. The screenshots look great. The graphics aren't the greatest, but at the same time, I feel like you're not going to notice it as much because you're a small character running around with giant things going on.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to be one of those like the Godzilla PS4 game where you're sweeping the camera angle around. You're going to be more like, I'm running from this building to this building so that Godzilla doesn't step on me.
Yes.
Type of thing, which is exciting.
Well, so I don't know if you guys have played any of the other games in this genre of city escape, but it's so usually the city has already started to be wrecked.
Yeah.
By the time you start your adventure.
Okay.
So it's going to be, if it plays out like any of the other, like, you know, city escape disaster games, it's going to be Godzilla trounces through an area. The city's all destroyed. You load into an area and start trying to make your way. Like, I've got to get out of here. And then King Ghidorah and Godzilla start fighting and change the landscape dramatically.
That sounds awesome. that sounds great.
That sounds good.
So we got to keep moving on because we got a lot of news this week. So, Rob, you have the next piece of news item from someone.
My new internet best friend, Jack, basically tagged me in a link that said Newt and Gorbachev.
Gottlieb.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Gorbachev.
Gorbachev.
His best friend, Newt, from Aliens.
Are you returning for sure for Pacific Rim Uprising? Mm-hmm. And I am super pumped about that because they're definitely, other than Ron Perlman, the best part of the first movie.
Definitely.
They're so in love.
They're so fun. I wonder what direction they're going to take them in, though.
I don't know. It's... We kind of talked about it back when Uprising's title changed, but I hope they're going to pilot like a kaiju of some sort, like whether it's like half biomechanical or what. I don't know. I mean, they kind of hinted towards it with the first movie, so like you could just take that to its next step.
Can I put down one of my patented fan theories real quick?
Sure.
Romantic comedy subplot.
I mean, it could be. We have no idea, to be perfectly honest. So.
It could be anything.
I kind of want them to go, because originally I remember hearing that they want Newt to be a bad guy in the
like
story.
Interacting with the alien.
Yeah.
Messed
because
him up
he,
or something.
Yeah, like he...
It's been a long time since we had a real good mad scientist in a movie.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, that would be good.
That would be pretty cool. But it's exciting to see they're back.
Yeah.
I like that they're back. That's awesome. I have nothing really else to say about it. It's it's good news. I mean, before we were pretty sure they were coming back, but we weren't 100% sure until now. So that's good. So next we're going to go into Godzilla heavy news for every single news item after this point. First off, for the anime, there is a anime convention coming up that the Godzilla anime is going to be a big part of, supposedly, for the upcoming projects section of this convention. Hopefully, cross your fingers, either we'll get a trailer, Godzilla design reveal, something. Like, I feel like...
I hope they don't reveal Godzilla's design just yet, but... I hope they show a bunch of other monsters.
That would be cool.
Like an anime, like revamped version of, you know, Space Amoeba or one of his other three forms. Oh, wait, no.
No. but yeah.
You mean Anguirus, the Space Amoeba.
Yes, Anguirus, the Space Amoeba. Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know if we're close enough to get the Godzilla design reveal. I mean, it is really odd that we have a Godzilla product that is not marketing Godzilla in it at all so far, other than the title of the thing. So it's a little weird. I feel like they may want to just like either really show Godzilla's design or tease it at least. Like maybe end on a silhouette, kind of similar to how the Comic-Con Legendary Godzilla trailer
Give us
did.
A dorsal fin, just one dorsal fin.
Would you
like them? Like, oh, that would be cool. Go like them in their little mech suits, like coming around like a hill, and cuts right when you see Godzilla's dorsal fin.
Yeah,
that
just
would
to
be
see
sweet.
How huge he is.
Yeah,
that would be pretty cool. Do you fine gentlemen, think that we aren't going to get Godzilla in the first movie? Do you think that they would they would hold Godzilla out until
they don't
like,
have
the, very
the
last
guts
scene?
To do that?
No, they don't. They don't. It's Toho. Like, I'm sorry. Like, Toho may be branching out, but they're not going to let a movie titled Godzilla not have Godzilla in it at all.
Yeah.
At Toho Studios, there isn't a statue of not Godzilla and then another statue of Godzilla hidden around the building.
Love a hetero statue.
I think.
But yeah, that's coming up real, real soon, so expect to see us post news about it as soon as it happens. I would assume we're going to get something, even if we just get some more pictures of like what the mechs look like and stuff like that. We're going to get something from it.
Show me those mechs.
I mean, and the anime comes out in November for Japan, so, I mean, we're getting there. We're getting close to it. So, now we've got a ton of Godzilla King of the Monsters news here. A lot of cast members got announced, so I'm just going to kind of run through them, and then we'll kind of go back over some of them. So Sally Hawkins, who appeared in 2014 as Dr. Vivian Graham, aka Sarazawa's assistant, she's coming back, which is great because Sarazawa has already been announced that Ken Watanabe is coming back as Sarazawa. Randy Havens, who played Mr. Clark, the teacher on Stranger Things.
Remember him?
Oh, my favorite actor.
They're like, hey, teacher, we need to build a sensory deprivation chamber. Sure thing.
Bradley Whitford has also been announced. Thomas, I'm going to butcher this name.
Uh-oh.
Middleditch, star of Silicon Valley, has also been added to the cast.
Yeah, he's Richard on Silicon Valley.
He's a comedic actor, right? Like,
yeah, he's in the new Verizon commercials.
Oh, that guy. Okay.
Where he drops a mic like three times and it goes on for way too long and it's not that funny.
It's not that
anyway.
Funny. But yeah, I'm sure he's going to play some sort of side comedic relief character that's probably going to either die or
sounds like,
just
man,
be there.
We a lot of people in this movie.
Yeah. speaking of a lot of people in this movie, we'll go back to the actors if you have something to say about it. But to the Michael Daughtry tweets that we've been getting from him.
Yes.
By the way, I've been corrected by my previous co-host, Coleman. I've been saying his name wrong. It's not Daughtry. It's
Dougherty?
Dougherty.
Man, anyway. we're on a roll.
But anyway, right? So I've been I've been mispronouncing it. I'm probably going to mispronounce it again, just like I do Hese. But he's been tweeting out a lot of really cool hints to things. And to go to the cast thing, before we get to all those really nice, cool little hints in the tweets, he posted a picture from the table read of King of the Monsters today. And the room is huge. Like, it's filled with so many people.
People are shouting their lines across, like, the
it's in a lecture hall, and they're just...
Yeah. Well, the tweet literally says it takes a village or something to... I think it takes a village to raise a monster is what he said in the tweet.
Oh, that's cute.
I like it.
It's kind of cute.
I would watch that movie.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, this cast is huge. It's got a lot of people in it. Got a lot of moving parts. A lot of good to decent actors.
Fairly big names.
Yeah, some... Yeah, fairly big names, but not like AAA big... You know, we've got Tom Hiddleston, Sam Jackson type of John Goodman.
Yeah.
You know, there's
no Cranston.
Big...
No Cranston in this one.
Yeah, no Cranston, which is, I think, good that they're avoiding that this time, where they don't have a big name that they're going to be like, this guy's in this movie.
Yeah.
It's Cranston versus Godzilla, like the big title match. You know, they're not doing that this time like they did in the marketing for the 2014, which...
But that also kind of worries me. Well, it means that they get to spend a shade less on actors and more on special effects, which... Based off of the other hints we've been hearing, good thing.
Yeah.
Good.
But I'm kind of worried that the general audience isn't going to be like wicked hype to go see it if there isn't like name that I know. Like,
I think they're going to be more, focused on the fact that Godzilla is there. Like, I think.
Yeah, Godzilla's our AAA name.
Godzilla's the AAA name this time. Like, there's no secondary, like I said, the Cranston versus Godzilla type of thing. Like, there's none of that this time. Now it's just like, Godzilla's been reintroduced to the public eye. Now it's, hey, here's a new Godzilla movie. Like,
also,
I think,
here's all his friends.
Yeah, also here's all his friends. Because I think they're going to hide some of them in the marketing. I don't think they're going to hide a lot of them. I think that they may hide, like, Ghidorah. Like, they may just, like, kind of tease Ghidorah, like, you know, little bits of his design and stuff like that. I don't think they're going to do what they did with 2014, where 2014 they hid, like, the Mutos. They hid Godzilla for the most part until closer to the release. I don't think they're going to do that this time. Well, with Godzilla, they're especially not going to do it, because they really, going to the tweet that we're about to talk about, they're going to really want to show that Godzilla is in this movie a lot.
I mean, just, like, my major concern with that, though, is that, I mean, yes, Godzilla is he's reintroduced. It's more of a well-known name again. Not that it was ever really forgotten, but like the general audience. But that's my big fear, is that like Jim and Darlene in the trailer park are going to be like, who's in the movie? Oh, Tom Cruise isn't in it. Well, I don't need to see it then.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to affect it.
Are Jim and Darlene just such huge Tom Cruise fans that they won't see any movie he's not in?
They watch Top Gun every night.
They must be really excited about The Mummy.
Yes, that's why I brought it up. I don't know how much that's going to affect it. I don't know if it's going to be a big deal. I just don't know. It's too early to say, I guess. I mean, it all depends on how they start marketing it, like, what they do. Like, are they going to make it seem like more of an action film? Are they going to do stuff like that?
Maybe we're too far in our niche, but I cannot imagine people being like, Godzilla, what is that?
Well,
unless they were born in between.
No, but, like, Godzilla fans will see this movie.
Yeah.
People who are pretty nerdy will see this movie.
But I mean, like, I feel like Godzilla, it's like Star Wars. Like, it goes beyond this sort of...
It does. Yeah. And I had discussions with people about this recently, too. We're getting way off topic. I'll try and raise back in a second. But no, like, talking about how many people would recognize Ghidorah. Like, not separate from Godzilla, but, like, having Ghidorah and, you know, Godzilla in a film. Like, are people going to remember, like, oh, it's the three-headed gold dragon he always fights? Like, are they going to remember that kind of stuff? I don't know about Ghidorah, but I do know that Godzilla himself is a recognizable character to the point where I can throw spikes on a dinosaur, throw them in front of somebody, and they'll go, oh, that's Godzilla. Like, they will know that they know the name Godzilla. Even people not in our generation group and stuff like that, like people in high school, middle school type of stuff, they'll know it just even on the basic level of dinosaur with spikes on its back is Godzilla.
That's true.
Because once again, that's such a woven in pop culture reference. I mean, there was that Charlie's Angels movie where they have that rap song with the Godzilla beat in it.
Yeah.
I have two real quick points. Yep. One, I mean to talk to you about that. Leave those dinosaurs alone.
What about them?
Quit gluing stuff to their back.
I'm sorry.
Let them go.
Also taking off all their feathers.
I'm sorry.
Rude. The world is changing. Accept it. Mothra's become a pretty big name.
Yeah.
Mothra's also recognizable outside of the fan base.
Yeah, people more or less. Like the fairy, the Shobujin.
I mean, it's not like they're at the same level of recognition.
No, but...
Of brand recognition.
Yeah, because Godzilla is like up there with like Mickey Mouse type of thing. Like, or at least it used to be. I don't know if it still is at that level anymore.
I would still say.
I don't think Godzilla 2 is in any trouble box office wise. I think that enough has been done at this point to build up to it just from 2014 and now... You know, we had Kong, and there was the after credit stinger for the people who stayed. And there's going to be people that are buying it on Blu-ray and stuff because it comes out like next month. So there's going to be people that didn't stay in cinemas that are buying it because they like the movie and they may watch the end of the credits and they may see that scene and be like, what? I think, and I mean, Godzilla versus Kong, we're going to get to that news in a little bit, is very prevalent on a lot of news sites, and Godzilla 2. We're getting casting announcements on like Hollywood Reporter / film, all the big movie sites. I know that's not really a general audience thing, but like it's getting a lot of media attention. It's not like it's kind of just drifted off into the distance and nobody's remembering the fact that there's a Godzilla movie coming out. It's getting a lot of big, like, hey guys, Godzilla 2 is coming out. This director's on it this month. But yeah, Michael Daugherty,
Michael. There we go.
Our good friend Mike.
He has tweeted out a bunch of things, as he's been prone to do this entire time, including, like what we've been hinting at, is he officially confirmed that Godzilla will have a lot more screen time than he did in 2014. Like, he specifically used the terminology, like, he will have a lot
much,
more.
Much more.
Much, much more.
Does he get a monologue?
I hope so.
Let him flex his acting chops, you know? Oscar season's coming up.
Godzilla in a World War II flick. As like a, you know, a nurse across the thin red line.
I think that's something that I'm actually really liking about, you know, like I said, we're going to get into it when we talk about the Godzilla vs. Kong director, too. I'm liking this whole fan interaction through Twitter that we're really getting with these two directors. Like, Michael's been doing it since he got announced, and now...
It's very different
than, new guy's
like,
been doing it too.
What Hollywood's been pushing towards recently. Yeah. Because it seems like as soon as J.J. Abrams, as soon as he rolled on the scene, mystery was the new thing.
Yeah.
Like, you sold a movie on what's in the box, what's the mystery? And it seems like he's going in like such a hard other direction where it's
But at the same time, he's really not.
He's being vague about it, but he's like directly talking to the audience.
But I think
he's giving us just enough.
But no, like you said, just enough. I think that's the key. Is he's doing this mystery in the box right, unlike other companies, directors, whatever.
Or they give us nothing.
Yeah, he's giving us like
or lies.
In the case of J.J. Abrams, J.J. Abrams full on. Yeah, But he's giving us like these little Tokyo tidbits. Yeah. You know, he's giving us, there's going to be more monsters. There's going to be practical effects. There's going to be this guy attached. And
another
this guy attached.
Another thing on Twitter Jack told me about, or retweeted at us, was someone asked, like, hey, can we expect to see more evolution? Will he change and look different from
I forgot to write the original on our movie? News.
And like one of the things I was thinking about is like, how would I, what would I like to see the design change to?
Yeah. You know? Okay, so hold on. I've got to put the brakes on this for a second here. Because fans have been going crazy over that tweet.
Yeah.
They've been going nutso.
Tearing each other apart. It's horrible.
I'm serious. Like, people are like, now people are going, the design's going to change completely. It's going to be Shin Godzilla. Like, it's like, here's the thing.
That intense.
It's not. First of all, if you actually read the tweet, he did not say that it was going to change a lot. He just said it's going to evolve.
He's the king of prime evolution.
Or something, whatever he said. But the
tweet again.
The biggest thing is that it's not going to change a lot. We're part of a franchise now, okay? They're not going to, like, completely radically change the design. Like,
he's part of the brand.
Like, yeah, he's the brand. He's Legendary's Godzilla. He's the MonsterVerse Godzilla. They're not going to completely change him. Just like, I guarantee you, Kong and Kong versus Godzilla is going to look different than he did in Skull Island, at least a little bit. They're going to want to sell toys, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
So they're going to change him just enough. They may make his spikes a little bigger. They may make him a little thinner. They may make his eyes a little bigger, his teeth a little bigger. Like, they may do, like, certain little things like that, slim him up, you know, do just little small things. They're not going to completely redesign him.
Yeah.
He's not going to go from looking like Legendary Godzilla to looking like 1954 Godzilla. No. That's not what's going to happen.
Although,
get that out of your heads, because it's not going to happen.
Although, imagine it.
No.
Legendary Godzilla going toe-to-toe with King Ghidorah, and all of a sudden he gets hit with a laser. Ah, and he falls down. It's like a pile of rubble or something.
And then he wakes up.
You hear the 1954 Godzilla roar, and then he stands up, and it's like the practical effect suit again, fighting a CG monster.
But then double twist, the suit unzips. And inside
is Shin Godzilla.
Mothra.
There goes our Shin Godzilla reference this time, guys. We can't reference it.
Oh, we blew through it already.
Yep.
Dang it.
All right. We got to move on. We got to move on. I mean, actually, no, real quick, because I took that. But, like, what design changes do you guys want to see? If they did some tweaks, not full design, because that's not what's going
to
happen.
I kind of want to see the little ears come back.
Yeah.
I would like to see Heisei had these little tiny ears that I was really into.
That'd be cool.
I wonder how you would do that onto that design.
Very easily. You just meld it in with his spikes coming down on the back of his neck.
I mean, just the same way they did in Heisei. Just real swept back. Barely
little,
noticeable.
Little pointy, like, goblin ears, I guess.
If you don't have the action figure, you might not even know they're there.
What do you want to see?
Toys. Without seeing him, like, go through any major changes, I like Alligatorzilla. He's my jam.
Yeah.
I think I would like to see more just like visual changes, like maybe show a little bit more of that glowiness that we got to see from later Godzillas in like the Heisei era. Like, he's absorbing radiation faster than usual or so, you know, like little things like that where we got to see design changes like that.
Like I said, the biggest thing I want to see is maybe tone him down, slim him down just a little
bit.
Tone
him up, slim him down.
I want to see like some more muscle definition in his chest area.
I want to see the big gains on you, Zilla.
Well, because, okay, like I think I've said this on the cast before. I don't know if it was when you guys were part of it, but like I think that one of the easiest ways to do that story-wise is the fact that now Godzilla's awake.
Yeah.
So he's consuming radiation. Like, imagine it just, I mean, he is called Bearzilla. So imagine a bear goes to hibernation, they gain a lot of weight, they burn through that fat when they sleep over the winter, and when they wake up in the spring, they've lost a lot of weight, they have to gain it back. So I think you could easily see, like, the Godzilla we see here, story-wise, would be thinner than he was in 2014, just because he doesn't have that stored-up fat. He hasn't been sleeping for millennia now. Now he's been awake for 5 years.
He's working it off. Like,
yeah,
he's been chasing those gains.
I mean, he swam real fast in 2014.
Man,
like,
he did.
He booked it. But yeah, I don't think there should be too many differences. Like, I would love to see the ears come back. I think that very easily you could change the feet, since that was a big contention back in 2014, was like Foot Wars 2014 was a
I stand
thing.
By those feet, though.
I like the feet. I think that if you look at the Godzilla PS4 game or the SH Monster Arts 2014 feet, they are like slightly different, but it's better. Like, they have more of a pronounced toe. Like, they're still the Bronto feet, but they definitely have a toe. And I think they could switch it to that and no one would notice the difference except for the hardcore G fans.
I do like more of a toe, but I like him when my big monsters have kind of like
elephant feet.
Yeah.
I like the elephant foot.
I like the realism of it. I like the reasoning why he has it is because so he can support the weight.
And I like seeing him take that step and then having the foot just kind of like compress.
Yeah.
And spread out just a little bit.
I just think you could add a little bit of toe. A little bit more than it had.
A smidge, a smidge of toe.
In
a touch of toe.
In the airport sequence, it is like literally just a stump. Like, yeah. I think you could just like just stretch those toes out just a little bit and it would be great.
Here's the thing. I just love Zone of the Enders, and this is the closest thing I'm going to get spike feet.
So, continuing on, because we have several more news items. This news item about Godzilla King of the Monsters isn't official. It's something on the IMDb page, and a lot of people have pointed out that he's listed there, and it's insane that he is attached to this film. The cinematographer for Godzilla King of the Monsters supposedly is Emmanuel Lubezki. Now, this guy, you may not recognize his name. I mean, he is a cinematographer. Most people don't pay attention to that sort of thing.
Normal people.
But when I name the films that he was the cinematographer on, it may pique your interest. He was the cinematographer for The Revenant, Birdman, Gravity, Children of Men. He did Ali back in the day. This guy has a very good visual eye as far as his filmmaking is concerned. Obviously, a movie is only as good as its script. I mean, he also was DP on A Cat in the Hat. But to be fair...
What a storied career.
But to be fair, when you look at that movie as for how it's shot and the lighting and the design of that sort of... That side of the filmmaking... I haven't seen that movie since it came out because it was trash. But... It's not bad.
Let me recall my fond memories of Mike Myers' The Cat in the Hat.
Please don't. It's horrifying to remember.
So, given all those credits, I want to take a stab at what I think the story's going to be.
Yeah?
What? You guys ready?
But he's just he doesn't have any input on
that. I want to take a stab at it, Rob.
Okay.
All right.
Here's what I think. Bear with me. We open 1689 on the International Space Station. Godzilla, a fur trader.
Oh my God. All right. Yeah, we don't know if he's official or not. Like I said, his resume is very, very impressive. If he is actually attached, like, we could see some really beautiful stuff coming from this film that I don't think any of us really expected to see. I mean, 2014 is a very well-shot film, but this would be a step above that, I would feel like.
I hope that they shoot night sequences better. I feel like the night sequences were a little bit too dark in 14.
Hang on. I noticed this a second ago, and I was actually going to bring it up to you off the cast, but since you brought it up, I noticed that when you last watched 2014, you watched the DVD.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a notorious thing in the fan base. The DVD transfer, and even the Blu-ray transfer to a certain extent, is god-awful.
Oh.
Yeah, it's...
Do I need to get the VHS copy?
You need to get the Blu-ray to really get anything out of it, but even then you have to... They need to redo the Blu-ray is what happened. Basically, the transfer came out real dark on the Blu-ray. The only way to watch it as it was shown in the theaters is either
Laserdisc.
Some of the special features, because the special features show the uncompressed footage because it's a short clip, or get the 3D Blu-ray, because the 3D Blu-ray, they had to brighten everything up, and so the transfer is more back to normal what it should be. Yeah, I was going to bring that up to you because I saw it, and I knew you were going to bring that up. Yeah, the DVD transfer is notoriously bad. Real, real, real bad.
So you heard it here, folks. If you really want to experience 2014 the way the director intended, get you that Laserdisc.
Yep, Laserdisc. That's it.
Never let it go.
Never let it go.
All right, so let's move on because we got to get to this beast of a
our
movie
Fathom
that
cast.
Our Fathom cast.
Yeah.
All right, so the last piece of news, or last two pieces of news, really, is we got a director for Godzilla vs. Kong.
Who is it?
It is Adam Wingard.
Friend of the cast.
Apparently. That's here's a little true. Tokyo tidbit, I wish. Hey, man, sorry. I may have an in. You never know. I could message him.
I was convinced for a second.
So I went to Full Sail. I graduated Full Sail in 2009. Adam Wingard graduated Full Sail in 2002. So obviously it was a few years before
me. You just missed him.
Yeah, just missed him. But
maybe you guys pass each other in the halls.
But it is kind of just a weird, like, I was freaking out the day of. Not because I'm super excited for Adam Wingard specifically, but it was just like weird, like, whoa, that train just missed me kind of type of thing.
Your alma mater.
Yeah.
I get how you feel because as a lot of people know, Matthew McConaughey went to the University of Texas. And the other day I walked across the campus and saw a squirrel there.
Oh, my God.
All right. Austin Community College.
No need to be a jerk, guys. Anyway,
I just wanted to tell my squirrel story.
Adam Wingard is the director for Godzilla vs. Kong. he's a very unconventional choice. Like, he hasn't really done anything that really made me go, wow, he's perfect or anything like that. Mm. Like I did with when Michael was announced. When Michael Daltrey was announced, I was like super just like, whoa, that's awesome. This is going to be great. None of Adam Wingard's movies have specifically wowed me. You know, he's done some good ones, but like he's also done some bad ones too. So it's a very weird choice. They must have seen something in him. And in that note, the things that they may have seen in him is he's a huge G fan. Ever since he was announced, he's been tweeting, like, nobody's business, just like Michael
Oh,
has.
Yeah, no.
And he's been going over, like, here's my favorite Godzilla movies.
He did his top four, his four favorite Godzilla movies and his four favorite Godzilla designs, which are all good choices.
They're all good choices, and the thing is they're not choices that you would just normally find just being a casual fan or whatever. They're like, he's actually watched these movies. He liked this, he didn't like this. He's gone into real specifics.
The way he's reacting feels really familiar. I feel like it's the way you would react if you were directing a Godzilla movie.
What?
Which actually makes
me
really
hope. Adam Wingard.
It's actually an anagram for Kyle Minnick. If you switch the letters,
you switch
everything
around.
But no, seriously though, he seems to be a real, real big fan of Godzilla. Maybe not so much Kong, which may actually lead us to maybe who's going to win that battle.
Oh, how dare he. You can't let personal bias influence this kind of thing.
I'm just saying.
You just
follow the stats.
Whoever's
Adam.
In the writer's room right now is flipping coins like in the Godzilla or King Kong versus Godzilla movie.
I really want them to use the computer program they used on the show Deadliest Warrior, where you plug in like a Viking and a ninja and they fight 1,000 times.
It's just really cool to see like how like excited he is. Like, I mean, he's just, fans are recommending things to him and he's like, I've heard of that. I want to check that out. I haven't read it yet. Like people recommended Half Century War, the comic book series. And it's exciting to watch his Twitter. Like, I'm sure we will end up sharing some of his stuff eventually on our Twitter, like retweeting some of the stuff. Cause there's just some really cool, like I said, he seems genuine in his love for kaiju.
He's into it,
which is
cool.
Good compared to, so story real quick before we move on. Back in 2014, Gareth Edwards was claiming that he was a big Godzilla fan. And I'm not here to doubt Gareth Edwards' love for Godzilla, but...
We'll grill him later.
Yeah, we will when we get to the episode about 2014. He said the thing that a lot of people that are like casual fans go, they're like, oh, I love the original. And then he's like, I also watched the Hanna-Barbera cartoon when I was younger. That's the end of it. Like, he didn't go like...
Sounds
he didn't
like
even,
me before I joined the
but
podcast.
But no, but he didn't even say like, oh yeah, I caught Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla on TV when I was younger. It was so much fun. Like, he didn't say anything like that. He was literally just original Hanna-Barbera cartoon. And it's like... That's not really the spirit of the whole series.
Okay, so I mean, I'm slightly better because I had a friend who was in Boy Scouts who would just bring those movies to every like sleepover.
Yeah.
So I saw a lot of like,
and I'm not saying
Showa era stuff.
I'm not saying Gareth Edwards hadn't seen the other movies. I'm just saying like whenever he talked about the ones he liked, he only talked about the original and Hanna-Barbera.
So you could say he's a purist.
I guess if you call Hanna-Barbera a purist.
Oh yeah, that's the only Godzilla I accept. Yeah, those are cheap imitations.
But yeah, so I mean, it's cool to see. As far as Adam Wingard goes, I feel like I'm willing to look past all of his other films and kind of give him a shot. Hmm. Just on that aspect of like, okay, he has directed some films, whether they've been good or bad, you know, that you can argue about that. But I think that with him being such a big fan of the series as a whole, the Godzilla series as a whole,
he's going to put everything he has into it.
Oh yeah, he's not going to want to mess it up.
Yeah.
He's real excited about it.
Yeah.
If it's a personal project, you're going to do as much as you can for it.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign.
As we're going to see with some of the other American monster movies we get into, that I hope we get into, you can really feel it when the director doesn't care about what they're doing.
I mean, we saw it when we watched Baron.
You see it when you watch Space Amoebas a little bit.
Oh, God, we'll get there eventually. So are we ready to move on to Beast from 20,000 Fathoms?
Oh boy, am I.
All right.
I was about to do the joke that I did last episode, but then I remembered that I did it last already. Episode, so I'm not going to do it.
There you go.
All right, guys, we'll see you in like 10 seconds.
And we're back with the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Woo! Yeah. Excitement.
Yeah.
Cameron, you want to take us through the real brief story plot of this movie, because there's not much to it.
Yeah, so this basically established a lot of really common tropes. So it's got, in hindsight, a really predictable story, but at the time it was groundbreaking. So scientists in Antarctica are testing a nuclear bomb, which, of course, wakes up a dinosaur that was frozen in the Arctic Circle, because that's, you know...
Because that's how it works.
That's where they fall asleep.
Operation Experiment, by the
way. They called it Operation Experiment. The monster wakes up, one guy falls, like, 8 feet and dies. And we meet our hero, Thomas Nesbitt, played by...
Paul Hubschmid.
Paul Hubschmid.
Uh-oh.
Big name.
Yeah.
So he tries to save the guy. He knows he can't make that 8-foot drop, so he rappels very slowly.
Oh my god.
He gets found by his superiors eventually, and he's like, the monster! We found a monster! And they're like, okay, whatever.
Whatever you say.
Whatever, Nesbitt.
Whatever, crazy person.
Cut to a ship on the ocean where everything's fine. And then the ship gets destroyed by a Retosaurus.
Yeah.
Who, quick side note, looks adorable when he's destroying
it. He looks
it.
like a little puppy playing with like a toy in a bag.
Yeah, he looks like a kitten batting around a ball of yarn. Yeah. Like he's inquisitive and... Oh, man. I got a real soft spot for this guy.
We'll get to the monster in a second.
Yeah, so that ship gets destroyed and disappears with only one survivor who washes ashore.
We call him
Potato Face. Tuberman. He's real ugly.
Poor guy.
he survives his ship getting attacked, and another ship was attacked when Retosaurus made its way from the Arctic Circle down to the good old US of A, where it's just got to attack. Because
they say that the only place a Retosaurus skeleton has been found is in the quote-unquote submarine caves near New York.
You guys know the submarine caves of New York.
Yeah, you know.
Big tourist attraction.
Yeah.
Where we put all our submarines.
All of our submarines go in the submarine caves. We had to clear out all those Retosaurus skeletons to make room for them. So Thomas Nesbitt finds out about these two other attacks, and he's like, oh, I wonder if that's the same monster.
Maybe I'm not crazy.
And being a scientist, he decides to track this down, but when he goes to other scientists to see if they're interested in it, in a very unscientific way, they go, no thanks, we're good.
You're crazy, we don't believe you.
We don't want to learn more about this.
That's where he meets Lee Hunter, played by Paulo Raymond, and Cecil Kellaway, who is just... adorable. He's like the greatest old man ever.
Oh, he's
Professor Thurgood Elson.
Yeah. He looks like Porky Pig.
He does.
A really endearing way.
He's great.
And at first, you know, Nesbitt tries to convince him, like, hey, I think we're looking for a dinosaur, and the guy's like, okay, but how is a dinosaur do you see what you're saying? And he's like, well, bears hibernate over the winter, what's the difference? And the guy has to point out to him that the winter and 100 million years are not the same.
Nesbitt is not the sharpest tool in the shed.
He is oh boy,
kind of a bad scientist.
Yeah,
I kind of wonder if scientist was an honorific. They made him an honorary scientist.
Yeah, so so she Lee takes her takes him back to her apartment to look through pictures to try and see if they can figure out what the creature looked like.
Yes.
And they find a drawing that looks exactly like the fire-breathing monster from that one Superman Fleischer cartoon from the 40s. Looks exactly the same. And he's like, that's the one.
That's it, that one.
It's really stupid.
Fire coming out of it.
I pointed it out. It didn't bother you guys as much, but it bothered me. Because, one, they're looking through, like, the same 6 photos.
Yeah.
Two...
6? That's generous.
Yeah. So the photo, A, the photo of the Retosaurus is completely different looking than all the other photos. B, the photo that he starts freaking out over that he recognizes, like, oh, that looks similar to what I saw, is a photo that he's literally, according to the, like, camera, like, doing the, you
we
know,
watched him
zip forward, like, he has looked at that photo, like, 3 times now, and
then finally
just
clicked.
Like, that's it.
That's the one.
And then he gets the Retosaurus picture and is like, no, yeah, that's it. That's really the one. It's like, the other one was a T-Rex. That's
it's like,
not
make up your mind,
thing.
Nesbitt.
How are you this bad?
How did you get science? who knighted you a scientist?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So they follow the reports of the disappearing ships. And they find a place in the ocean where they're like, that's where the Retosaurus is.
No, you're skipping.
Yeah. What did I skip?
You skipped the fact that he goes up and talks to Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah, he goes and talks to Mr. Potato Head. Mr. Potato Head's like, you know, tells him what happened. And at first he's real mad because he's like, oh, you guys are just going to laugh at me.
Yeah.
And not just because of my hilarious face.
Yeah, and he goes back with them, and they basically do the double blind test of, like, I didn't tell you what to look
the
for.
The first bit of science in this whole movie.
Yeah, it's an actual science.
Yeah.
Which is really good for a
50s movie.
For a 50s movie.
But he recognizes the Retosaurus, and
yeah.
We cut to the lighthouse attack.
Cut to the lighthouse attack, which...
Well, wait, no, that's not what a double blind test is. A double blind test is when the person administering and the person receiving both don't know. So technically, it was just like a blind test?
Well, technically, the professor doesn't know what picture he chose either.
Oh, does he not?
No, because remember, he goes, this is the same photo that I chose.
Oh.
So...
Oh, okay.
Ha-ha!
It was partially double blind.
Somewhat.
Well, I'm glad we settled that.
Anyway... So the lighthouse attack happens while they're discussing the Retosaurus.
I would like to point out my first factoid is Factoid Boy.
Okay.
So Ray Harryhausen, who of course did the monster effects on this, turns out he's friends with Ray Bradbury.
Of Starship Enterprise fame.
Yep, that's definitely who Ray Bradbury is.
Hey, G-fans may not know, okay.
super wrong.
Ray Bradbury wrote Fahrenheit.
Yeah, Fahrenheit
451.
Different person. Yeah. I'm talking about Gene Roddenberry.
Gene Roddenberry is actually
person. It's the same thing. I missed it because I don't know names. Anyway,
he knows faces.
Cameron,
you show him a picture. Ray Bradbury.
That's him. That's the one.
That's the guy. That's what I saw at the Arctic Circle was Ray Bradbury. Ray Harryhausen and Ray Bradbury were hanging out having a good time because they're best friends, like all guys named Ray are. And he shows them the screenplay for the movie he's working on, and Ray Bradbury reads it, and he comes across a scene where a dinosaur attacks a lighthouse. And Ray Bradbury had recently written a short story in which a dinosaur attacks a lighthouse. and at this point, the movie was called The Sea Monster, or The Monster from the Sea. Ray Bradbury's book was called... It was called The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Oh. And I was just going to call it The Beast.
No.
Oh.
You got to add in the
depth. I was going to call it Behemoth.
You got to add in the depth that he comes from.
I was going to call it Star Trek.
He's a more general beast. He's not a utopian future. yeah, so the studio liked the name Beast from 20,000 Fathoms so much, they actually bought it from Ray Bradbury, and he later renamed his story.
He called it Foghorn Leghorn.
He called it the Foghorn...
Oh, it was close.
Leghorn.
Anyway, it's a lighthouse attack.
Yeah, the lighthouse attack, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Such a great sequence, and then immediately followed by, like, the most pointless sequence of the ballet dance.
Of the ballet.
Yeah, so they've been working real hard, so they decided, I guess, take a night off and watch a ballet.
Yeah.
Then when the ballet is done, we go back out to the ocean.
And that's when the diving bell sequence
They go in the diving bell, and for some reason the doctor is entranced by an octopus and a shark fighting.
One of like the worst effects
we
in this
entire
movie.
We have some locals fighting. Oh, it's so charming.
I love watching the locals fight. For my amusement.
It's so weird because they play the shark and the octopus off as huge. Like, because they get eaten by the Retosaurus and, like,
So they must be people-sized.
Yeah, but...
They must be.
But they aren't, though.
Yeah, but it's like a regular old octopus that...
And, like, one of those small sharks you see at, like, aquariums.
Like a dogfish. Like, real
yeah,
little.
Yeah, like just a real small shark. And they fight, but suddenly they're the size of the Retosaurus's mouth.
Yeah. Yes.
Because the Retosaurus poorly superimposes his way over...
Not CG.
Not CG,
Rob. No.
The Retosaurus... Poorly superimposes himself over them, and then they disappear into his mouth.
They move the Retosaurus's head in front of the film that they were showing. and then the doctor's like, oh, wow, it's the Retosaurus. Oh, he sees me. Oh, this is fascinating. He's eating the diving bell. Oh, he's crushing us. I can't believe what I'm seeing.
We're in his fourth stomach.
Oh, we're in our fourth stomach. I'm being digested for thousands of years. I'm in incredible pain. It's incredible.
Oh, my God.
The whole time he's talking to Lee and Swedish scientist American man.
Swiss-American scientist
Nesbitt. and then the line goes dead. And they're like, wait, reel him back in. The line's gone dead. And then they do the newspaper spin. Turns out the character is dead. You won't see him anymore. He died off.
No, he's gone. He had to do other movies. He's gone.
Basically, they go back to shore. The girl is real depressed because her teacher died.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her father figure died.
Suddenly we're
at the end of the movie, by the way.
The Metasaurus attacks
New York. And it's another big action sequence.
Yeah, he plows through some buildings, he crushes some cars.
Let me put it this way. If you've seen any clips from this movie, it is from this sequence at the end. This attack sequence on New York is the scene that is on all those like trailer big 50s monster movies.
If you had any of those kids books about movie monsters, and it mentions the movie at all, it has a picture from this scene.
From this scene.
It's great.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
I'll talk about that more.
We'll talk about it when we get to the special effects.
We also have the brief screen time of my favorite character. The one New York beat cop.
The police officer.
Yeah. Who's tired of being pushed around by these giant monsters.
Man, he was ready.
This one guy just walks forward, unfazed. So he's like, we got another one. And he's like...
pulls out a revolver.
Well, first he tries to stink eye it, I think. And then he pulls out a revolver and just starts shooting at it. And Redosaurus, doesn't care. Barely notices.
Eats him.
And then eventually sees him and then eats him.
Yeah.
But he never backed down.
Yeah, so the Redosaurus has this cool attack sequence.
Then there's the military sequence where we get introduced to his poison blood, or his bacteria blood.
Right. Yeah. Now keep in mind, once again, this is in the last 10 minutes of the movie here.
Yes.
Yeah.
It breezes by.
Oh, by the way, his blood's poison.
Much unlike the rest of this movie. So he gets attacked by the RPGs and stuff, and
one RPG, one man.
No, they fire. There's two shots.
He shoots several times.
He shoots several times, but it's, I gotta make this very clear. It's one guy with a bazooka.
That's true,
and he doesn't put it down for anyone.
That's true.
No,
he carries that bazooka for the rest of the movie.
So it's poison blood. All the soldiers on the ground that were trying to follow him die. Somehow, and I'll talk about this again. Somehow they keep losing this monster. Anyway,
he's very quiet, Redosaurus.
He's very quiet.
Very stealthy little monster.
So they go, he has poison blood. I guess we need to kill him with a radioactive isotope, because...
How else are we going to deal with that?
Something. keep in mind, we just watched this movie, and this isotope thing is kind of a weird, what?
the idea... So Nesbitt, the scientist man, walks up and says, okay, here's the rub. This thing, we can't blow it up. We can't set it on fire. Its bacteria would go everywhere and might wipe out the human race.
If you set it on fire, its bacteria would go everywhere?
Yeah, it would particleize its something. They say there's an excuse for it. But, so they're like, I know, we'll inject it with a radioactive isotope and
perfect.
It'll kill all of its cells from the inside.
Elegant solution.
It won't, disperse and kill a bunch of people.
So that good old Swiss Yankee ingenuity.
Then they get to the big final sequence at the fairgrounds or whatever.
So Nesbitt, because it has to be him because he's our hero, and
random soldier
and random
one.
Super good marksman soldier put on their beekeeper outfits, and so Redosaurus is trapped inside a roller coaster, which again, it's like cute animal video on YouTube.
But I want to stress, there's no scene of him entering inside of this.
They just show up and he's in there.
Literally, it's like
there's a sequence where he starts biting it,
but he's already inside of it.
Yes.
Yeah. When we show up, he's in there.
There's no scene of him looking around and seeing roller coaster and be like, oh, roller coaster.
Yeah, that was fun.
Someone grabbed him. Ray Harryhausen's god hand came down, plucked him up. Dropped him in the center of the roller coaster.
You know, in Clash of the Titans, Zeus picks up Perseus and puts him somewhere else.
Yep.
It's the same
just
thing.
Like that.
Zeus was tired of Redosaurus's hubris.
So now we're at the very slow,
so good,
untense roller coaster scene where...
I want you to say that sentence again. Very slow, untense roller coaster scene.
Yes.
Seems kind of odd.
They ride a roller coaster up to the top,
and then
it stops. They get out, and then they shoot him once with
the isotope,
and then
out of a normal gun, by the way,
old gun, but it's got an attachment. Kyle,
literally just popped a bottle rocket on the top of the gun and shot it into the Redosaurus. Yeah.
But it's a radioactive bottle rocket.
Yeah,
Kyle.
Okay,
double. Yes.
You can't buy those anymore.
No, those are illegal.
Yeah, those went the way of the lawn dart.
Land of the free.
The radioactive lawn dart.
The roller coaster catches on fire.
Well, it falls and hits some barrels of oil. It catches...
Conveniently placed barrels of oil.
Yeah.
That I think were already burning? I don't know.
Ah,
but either way, then there's no dialogue. There's no, like,
they slowly
just, like,
walk.
Very slowly, yes. Walk, climb.
Calmly, too. It's not like there's no tension.
It's an emergency situation. You got to stay calm. You can't lose your head in a situation like that, Rob.
The wooden roller coaster they're standing on is on fire. There is a monster that it's in its death throes, like, thrashing around.
Yeah. Also, this is the saddest monster death since King Kong.
Yeah.
It's not because I feel literally since King Kong. Just because the sounds he makes are so sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
He's got very, very sad roars at the end, especially.
Yeah, and then it's just like really unceremoniously, he falls to the ground and then white.
Everybody hugs.
They all hug.
No dialogue, though.
Literally everyone hugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all walk in to hug the two radioactive dudes. And then, like, it just, like, cuts back to the dying Redosaurus. He falls down. And then in big white letters, just the end.
And then, you know, generic end of monster movie music.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Ah, man.
So.
That was the thrill ride.
The best part, though, was definitely the post-credit sequence. Like, after we come back at the very, very end, and we see Redosaurus with a family relaxing on a new monster island.
Yeah.
And it was just really sweet to see, like, oh, he did get a happy ending.
Well, Rob, what I really enjoyed was the post-credit sequence where they give Redosaurus a full military burial with full honors.
Yes. Well, because he eventually does die of the cancer.
He does. Yeah, he dies of the cancer from the radioactive isotope after a really long struggle. But as they're all going in, they throw their pots of dirt and the service is done, they walk away. Boom, hand shoots out through the coffin.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The dirt starts to shake a little bit and lift off of it.
And then the post-credit sequence.
Yeah, what was...
Post.
He gets eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Really enjoyed that.
Out of nowhere.
Well, they fly him to a new planet.
Yeah.
And then he walks down.
They put him in the rocket that they use for Gamera.
Where he lives happily for like 30 years. And then in 1977...
Wait a minute. I don't think any of that happened.
I mean, mine definitely happened.
Mine definitely happened, actually.
Technically, yes.
It did. In 1977's Dinosaur Planet, where they reuse... Planet of the Dinosaurs. Yeah. I like my title better. Where they use the miniature for Redosaurus, once again.
And he gets eaten by a T-Rex.
Who is way bigger than him.
Real brutal.
Redosaurus is a little punk dinosaur.
So yeah, that's the movie. That's the plot. Let's kind of breeze through things here. There's really not too much to talk about with a lot of things, but we didn't really mention it. So we've got to talk about this guy's accent
because
we were just losing our minds.
Yeah.
So okay. So you read his name. He's a Swedish actor.
He's from Switzerland.
He's from Switzerland.
Whatever. It's the same thing.
He's from Swisherland.
Swisherland. Dude. Cannot keep a single accent for more than a scene.
Yeah.
How did no one say anything?
Yeah.
Just stick to your Swiss. Just stick to your Swiss accent. Just do that. That's fine.
That kind of is the Swiss accent, isn't it? It's a little bit. Sometimes it's French. Sometimes it's German.
Sometimes he like slips into like an American, like mid-Atlantic accent.
Yeah, he was doing this
one here. Because he's supposed to be from New York, is what he says in the film.
But they only do that.
I am from New York, born and raised.
He does it like three or four times. And then the rest of the movie is like, bork, 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 bork.
He's not Swedish.
Oh my god. Point is, as you can hear from the two of these idiots, his accent's real bad.
It's real weird. It's all over the place.
It's real awkward. It makes everything that he's saying, you can't take him 100% serious because you're like trying to figure out what he's trying to do.
It's fascinating, though.
It's kind of interesting because you're sitting there trying to figure out where he's from.
It's a fun game.
Yeah, it is.
I thought like, oh, is he German? Because maybe it's a German accent. But no, it's not that. And then like, okay, well, he's doing like the... listen here, kid, you can't stay with me. You gotta get... And then, like, he'll slip back into, like, you know...
He sounded vaguely, like, Latin, like South American for a little while. Sometimes he would sound like Ricardo Montalban. It was weird.
I don't remember the director's name, but, like...
Eugene Laurier.
Okay, for 5 seconds, pull that guy aside and be like, just pick one. Just pick one.
I'm sure he did thousands of times throughout the shooting of this movie.
He's like...
no, I don't like this voice anymore.
And they eventually
different.
Just ran out of time, and he couldn't just like, okay,
like,
fine. You know what? Just
let him do whatever.
Just say your lines. Just say your lines. Just say your lines.
That's all. If you can just do that for me.
I just want to make this dinosaur movie that I'm never going to regret.
So yeah, so his accent was terrible. Most of the other characters are kind of forgetful.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the scientist. Professor
Porky Pig.
Yeah.
The professor's great. Can I just jump into cinematography? Because I don't really, like, the characters weren't like...
Yeah, like, let's talk about cinematography and... Because
there's only one thing, and I think you want to talk about the lighting.
Yeah. Okay, so kind of jumping our head to our final thoughts, you have to kind of understand that we all realize what this movie is for the giant monster genre.
Amazing.
Very important.
It's very important. So, looking at it objectively... looking at it objectively and comparing it to movies that came out around the same time, or movies that came out actually even before this movie, like I would say 20 years before.
What came out 20 years?
Oh, you know, before? Maybe.
Oh, Mighty Joe Young.
That's
right.
It.
Yeah.
That's the one.
That's what we're talking about.
There is a distinct lack of mood lighting in this film. And with a couple of exceptions, there's a couple of exceptions where it is there. The lighthouse sequence being one, which I know we're going to talk in the special effects / monster section in a second, but the rest of the movie is very flat.
Yeah.
And when you're filming black and white, and they knew this even back in the day, you really have to pull out those shadows, especially for a movie that's supposed to have a little tension like this movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the filmmaker in me wants to say that's this movie's biggest failing is the fact that it doesn't play with lighting as much as it could. In most of the scenes. Like, once again, I know there are exceptions in this movie. There's stuff like the lighthouse sequence. There's some parts of the final attack in the roller coaster.
Yeah.
Where the Retosaurus is getting amazing lighting from the fire because there's obviously no fire around the little puppet.
Yeah.
But then took a lot of work.
But then the beekeepers are just, you know,
Just flat, just like...
Yeah. Like it almost looks
studio
like
lighting.
It looks like daylight with like a black screen behind them. Like it's weird.
They call it studio lighting in the biz. But it's like literally where you've got bright lights in a studio that are just always on a set, and that's just what they look like.
Bright lights, big city. That's a dumb joke. Never
except
mind.
Except this.
It's supposed to be like not a nighttime sequence.
I'm not even just talking the end sequence. Even the New York attack sequence, like because it's so shadowless for the most part.
Yeah, it looks like they're carrying a spotlight around. Like in the canon of the film, it looks like the military is just like there's Bazooka Guy, Bazooka Joe, and then like there's Spotlight Man.
Yeah. Spotlight Sam.
Run around and have like a big spotlight that they aim towards the monster.
That is casting light on everyone.
We need to reload the cannon. And then like he turns and aims it at everyone else. And it's just kind of like the whole movie is like that.
Yeah.
Every time there's a night sequence. And it's really bad during the soldiers walking sequence when you can see the literal ring of light around them as they walk. And then the ring of light around where they're supposed to fall down.
Yeah. It just... I mean,
especially when that one guy, like, he falls over in, like, a stoop on, like, somebody's, brownstone and then just disappears in the weird shadows on the stairs. Vanishes into the shadow realm.
Yeah, I mean...
Your move.
The cinematography, other than that, is pretty uneventful, I guess is the word I would use.
Flat is a good term.
Flat, yeah, flat. It's just flat. It's a very
static.
Flat
it
movie.
It doesn't really do anything.
It doesn't do anything. It just... It doesn't impress. It's not... you go... 1 year later to 54 Godzilla and you go, wow, like that's how you do a black and white like monster movie. Like I'm not trying to compare the two, although it is fair
or
to
a few years after that to Varan.
Yeah, there you go.
The pinnacle
actually,
of the genre.
To be perfectly honest, Varan has better lighting than this movie does.
Yeah.
And it's very weird. And I know it is the style of the Hollywood filmmaking like of the time with that flat lighting and stuff like that. I understand that, but watching it without thinking of that kind of things, it does look very inauthentic. It flat, you know, once again, it just looks like it just doesn't look cinematic at all, really. Like this looks like
a play.
Other than the special effects,
it looks like
it
a
looks
play.
Like, a play or a made for TV like thing.
I mean, there are some scenes where Retosaurus looks nice and leathery.
Yes.
And then there are some scenes where he looks like clay. Like he's got this weird like matte finish on his body suddenly.
I mean, I was going to say that because here's the thing. The only Harryhausen films I had seen up to this point have been like things on like Turner Classic Movies you know, late at night when I was a kid.
That's where
so
I first saw this
movie. This is the first one that I've seen in a while. So I was deeply impressed. I mean, it was a four-legged kaiju that looked, you know, like he wasn't walking around on his hands and knees.
Yeah.
But
you just got to get over that, Rob.
I know. But I was really, really thoroughly impressed. And I even liked the matte paintings. There were a handful of moments, like you brought this up. I didn't notice it. I was, you know, just like awash with like, oh, look at the stop motion. It's so cool. But like where there's a matte painting and there's nothing in the foreground. It's literally just
the Redosaurus puppet
with
a matte painting sitting right behind him.
Yeah. And I think that is what Rob just said is exactly what they were banking on when they first made the movie. Like people are going to be so entranced with this incredible creature. They're not really going to.
And I'm sure at the time they were, like, nobody would have noticed that sort of thing. But being the people that we are now and
snobs,
we've grown up a lot.
A lot of
we've learned a lot.
Yeah.
We've laughed a lot.
But it is noticeable. And like you were saying, like those specific shots, it's really weird because there was a shot with this problem and then it cut to a shot without this problem within like the same, like literally 2 seconds. So it's very noticeable. So whenever the Redosaurus is by himself in front of a matte painting, the matte painting behind him is painted to look good as a distance thing. Like it's supposed to be behind things. So it's like the city in a distance.
Blurry.
But because it's so close to the Redosaurus, because that's all they wanted in the shot, you can tell the back painting is blurry. You can tell it's a separate element from the Redosaurus.
Yeah.
Versus the next shot, which is the Redosaurus between two miniature buildings.
Yeah.
With like miniature cars and like the superimposed people running away from him. When you see that shot, it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And you can appreciate the skill of the filmmaking that it took to do that. And stop motion itself is, you can appreciate the magnificence that is. But there's a lot of scenes like that where it's very just weird that they didn't. Like you said, they were banking on the impression of the Redosaurus being impressive, which he is very impressive. But it is just kind of... Watching this movie nowadays, like, I'm a big proponent for there are certain movies that are timeless, and you can kind of look past the special effects, like Kong 33.
Yeah.
This doesn't quite get to that level because there are those weird little things that just don't look quite right.
Yeah, I can see that. I guess there's still that side of me that has a bit of childhood wonderment.
Yeah.
Where it's like when I see something of this scale and scope of like, oh wow, they did it. They made it work. Like I didn't ever go to like actual film school. I'm just like a movie nerd, but I did, little known fact, go to claymation school. There was like a whole summer course that I took that I just learned how to make like stop motion movies.
Is this a bit or is this a real thing?
No, this is a real thing.
Oh, this is a real Rob fact.
Yeah. No, I'm not gonna like and then like that and then I made a Shin Godzilla. No, that's a real thing. I made like stop motion claymation movies for a while.
Oh.
It was right around like the Wallace and Gromit stuff was like super big.
Yeah.
Some local like high school had summer classes that like people could just go to and I was a kid, but it was fun. But, like, seeing that and, like, knowing the time and effort and energy that went into, like, making the tail flop around, I was entranced.
Not to mention the, like, a big part of what made Ray Harryhausen so great is that he did his homework on how animals build, like, that move. And you can really see it with Redosaurus.
Yeah. So since we're talking so much about the monster, I feel like we said...
Can we just talk about the monster?
Let's talk about the monster / special effects, and then we're kind of just moving to...
They're kind of one and the same, because the monster is the special effects.
Yeah.
Except for some miniatures, which are well done.
Yeah. Rob, you want to start with the monster? Go ahead.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Don't use that voice again.
Yes, please. And thank you.
Some people listen to this on headphones, and you're just doing that right in their ears.
Sorry, let me try this again. Yes, please, and thank you.
There you go.
I love the like detailed scales of this. It only looks kind of rough when we have the underwater sequences. I think he looks kind of bad.
Yeah.
And the pure white of the Arctic, he looks really bad.
I mean, we know how you feel about those big, thick black outlines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've been trying to get better about it. This creature looks and moves and feels like a real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just everything about it, which is why I was so bummed out when he like died of cancer in the post-credit sequence.
Yeah, very upsetting.
It was really sad.
Who's going to take care of the little reds?
Yeah. I don't know. Not me.
Who knows?
Not Rob, that's for
Not
sure.
Not Rob.
They're basically walking biological weapons, so...
I mean, I agree with most of your sentiment. I think that the Redisaurus, like the way he moves, the way he looks, it's a very cool design. It's a cool monster.
I like his eyes too.
Yeah, he's got real nice eyes.
Oh, he's got eyes. He has beautiful eyes.
The one addendum that I would add to sometimes when he looks bad is when it is the hand puppet.
When it's the puppet over clearly, the stop motion.
Like, we were joking that, and I know this movie came way after this movie did, but we were joking how it looks like Reptilicus.
Yeah.
And it really kind of does. Mm-hmm. And it's weird like that it looks like Reptilicus, but it does. Look up a picture of Reptilicus, G-fans, or kaiju fans, giant monster
watch.
Fans.
Mr. Science
Theater. Or watch Mr. Science Theater.
Starring Rob.
Starring Rob.
I don't even remember filming all that, but...
so the puppet looks really rough. They only use it for like 3 or 4 shots in the film. Then again, the Redisaurus is only in 6 minutes of the movie.
He's only in 6 movies.
He's only in 6 movies.
They only made 5 more Redisaurus movies after this.
But yeah, he looks great when he's moving around. Like, I think that he's unique. He is kind of recognizable just because he is a four-legged kaiju.
Yeah.
Or a giant monster.
One thing that I can say about this that is rare for me to say about giant monsters, this one looks a lot better in the daytime. Usually, nighttime sequences.
Well, except for the lighthouse.
Except for the lighthouse looks really rad. You're right. But that's a silhouette.
Okay.
Silhouettes always look cool. Silhouettes are always awesome.
That's true.
It'd be a good album cover. It's for Redisaurus's.
Or like a podcast cover. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
Nah, I wouldn't use that one.
Oh, it's too late. But yeah, Cameron, I'm sorry. I've been kind of like hogging all the time here. Cameron, do you?
I mean, there's not a whole lot to say. I agree. But also, we mentioned how Redisaurus moves like a real animal.
Yeah.
And I found it really endearing, and I got kind of emotionally attached to Redisaurus.
Yeah.
This isn't a bit.
Definitely like you get that same like I would say sadness that you feel at the end of weird reference, but Kong 2005, not so much 33. But,
yeah,
because you feel like he's a creature that is just like innocent in a lot of this.
He's not,
type of thing.
He's not evil. He's not trying to break things. He's just he's in a radically different environment.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'd like to build a pen for him in my backyard. I'd like to get him set up out there. I think he'd have a real good
Cameron
home.
Cameron has a huge backyard, by
it's
the way.
It's massive. It's actually Big Bend State Park.
Yeah.
That's my whole backyard.
Just live in the wilderness, actually. Yeah. I don't have a home.
I have a hutch is what I live in.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about?
Well, I mean, we got to talk about the actual special effects.
No, with the monsters.
Oh, the monster? No, I think I've said my, I think we've all kind of said our piece.
I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed
cool
seeing, he's a
nice,
really cool monster.
Yeah.
He has a shape that isn't used a whole lot.
The lizard-y type shape.
Yeah, just the more
Komodo
traditional, like, yeah, the giant Komodo dragon.
It kind of, that design.
Or some would say Gila monster.
Mm. That design, stopped getting used after the...
when we switch really
stop
over
motion,
to, yeah, if we switch to suits and we can't get actors to do that.
It's,
with
not, it's not even that. It's just like once stop motion left American cinemas, even we haven't seen like a CG 4-legged giant monster
outside of the Sci-Fi Channel. Looking at you, Mega Crocodile.
Other than just like a lizard that's just blown up out of proportion or whatever. But like we've never seen like a Redisaurus, a uniquely designed 4-legged monster in movies recently. I would love to see that. That would be nice.
Yeah. So aside from that, let's talk about special effects. Okay. It's 50-50. It's 50-50. You may think it's less. I think it's 50-50.
Okay.
The matte paintings look good 50% of the time. The miniatures look good 100% of the time. The water sequence where he's eating the boat looks not great. It's like, I feel like it's 50-50 for me, where there's moments that are like really, really good. And there are moments like with like the cheapness of the effect.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah,
and it's limits of what
I don't
want to
rip this movie apart because it doesn't deserve it, but it just, once again, it sucks because I'm comparing it, not even to modern movies. I'm comparing it to movies from its time, if not before its time.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't quite get there. The individual pieces are there. That's what bothers me about it, is like the Ray Harryhausen stop motion effects for the Redisaurus are fantastic. Like at all points, they're fantastic. The way
real
he moves,
real
the way
good.
He looks is great. The problem is it doesn't mesh well with some of the, like the matte paintings, the foreground imposed humans doesn't really match up right. Sometimes, like I noticed it, I didn't point it out to you guys. I thought it was hilarious. So the sequence where he's going after the electric fence. Yeah, when he's attacking it,
So
the sparks happen sometimes when he hits it, and then sometimes happen when he's nowhere near
so
it. And then
here's something a little funny. So you know how we always joke about like it's just a screen, basically just it's just the movie on a screen.
Yeah,
the whole image is moved forward when the Retosaurus is attacking.
Oh yeah,
so you can see the matte painting behind him, like go burp, burp, whip, whip. Burp, like moving forward towards the fence. So it kind of like it is, I would actually agree with you. It is 50-50. There's like 50% of it that I love, 50% of it that I hate. I mean, I 100% love the entire lighthouse attack sequence. Is just the best scene in the movie.
Primo.
It's cutting between real actors as they're running down the staircase, as he's attacking it from the outside, as it crushes. Like,
yeah.
Like there's so many things. Like you said, it's like a silhouette shot, which are always beautiful.
Yeah.
And like that is probably the peak of this movie's like special effects stuff, I would say.
Would you compare it to in 54 when the big G first makes landfall?
Yeah. I would compare it to about that same level of like iconicism. And I think... I do think it is, like you said, it's 50-50. There's some really great stuff. There's some really bad stuff. And like I said, I'm not saying bad for now. I'm saying bad for the time. Like, even compared to another movie that came out one year after it, or maybe 1 year before it.
What movie was that?
You know,
the re-release of Mighty Joe Young. That's what it was.
Yeah, that was it. That's Gorgo. The one. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you look at some of the effects work in Kong as far as the projection of like because Kong is a fantastic experiment in special effects filmmaking back in 33, which I will gush about when we talk about 33 Kong. But I wish I could say it's like this is the primo like stop motion this is the real good. And like I said, the Retosaurus itself, the creature, is that primo, like, 100%. This is the best of stop motion.
The important part is real good.
But the ancillary stuff, not so much.
It's very clear what they consider to be ancillary in this movie.
They definitely had their focus on the Retosaurus.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, at that time, that was the thing to focus. That should have been the thing to focus on. It is supposed to be a giant monster.
It's a movie that succeeds in what it set out to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
So yeah, final thoughts, I guess. Let's go, unless you guys had something else to say about special effects.
I'm ready with final thoughts.
All right.
And I want to open up in saying that this movie I think is very good. I mean, I picked it. It was my call. I made this happen.
That doesn't happen.
I have the power. It's kind of like required reading in English.
Yeah.
You know, like the book you're reading may not be your favorite. It may not like grab you and pull you in, but you can recognize its importance. In particular here, this is the first time that a lot of really big tropes were used.
Yes.
This is the first time that a nuclear bomb is used in the origin of a critter.
This also, like, there's so many little tiny bits and pieces of this movie that's like, that I saw, and when I was first watching this, I was like, oh, from that other movie. But it's from a movie that came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the whole poisonous blood sequence is very reminiscent of Cloverfield.
Yeah.
The roller coaster sequence at the end made me think about Zombieland, you know? Like there's all these little tiny things where it's like, oh hey, wow, we use that again.
Yeah.
And it's neat going back and seeing old movies and seeing that. So my final verdict is this belongs in a museum.
It does, though. It
belongs in a museum.
It belongs. Voice anymore, put it in the Smithsonian.
You need to sound more gravelly.
Yeah.
This belongs in a museum.
No,
part time.
That's too gravelly.
Yeah. Get off my plane.
So, God. My final thoughts on it are it's definitely a classic. And I say that in the best way possible and the worst way possible. I think that the movie has pacing issues abound. We didn't even really talk about it, but this movie has nothing that happens in it for like three quarters of it. We were joking, or I was joking with you guys before we started recording, that like you could skip to the monster sequences and have not missed anything.
You can fill the gaps in your mind.
Without even like trying, though. Like, and maybe that is because it is that classic thing with all the tropes.
Yeah.
But to be perfectly honest, like there's so much filler in this movie of stuff that doesn't need to happen. Like,
yeah.
You know, why is there a second boat attack? Why did that even need to be discussed? Why is there
so that we could have a cranky sea captain? You
but
didn't
why
want to
is
see him?
Why is he different? Why they should have just used the same boat captain?
You can't have two
before.
Survivors from a monster attack.
Why not?
That's ridiculous.
But anyway,
or have the lighthouse have a survivor from the lighthouse or something? I don't know.
No, also ridiculous.
But yeah, it just this movie is a classic, and it is definitely worth a watch for that classic aspect. But I can honestly say I don't know if you're gonna have a real good time watching it.
It's one of those films that I feel like, because of the pacing issues, because some of the special effects don't quite match up to even what you would want them to be in your imagination.
Yeah.
Even for that time. Even like taking your brain and saying, I'm in the 1950s. Like,
I'm a 50s man. I'm wearing a big hat.
Like, there
and
are
a thick
some
suit.
Things that just like, you know, look a little weird.
Yeah.
I was able to buy a car for $30.
But yeah, so I would say it's a classic. I would say it's definitely worth a watch. It's definitely a big movie. You know, obviously this movie is the inspiration for Godzilla.
Yeah.
And so that, just that alone, especially for fans of giant monsters that, like us, it holds that place in our timeline of being a big, important film.
It's absolutely required viewing if you really want to dig into kaiju movies as a genre.
Yeah.
And you really wanna,
it's definitely, yeah, it's one of those movies you have to get to eventually, I think.
I recommend it the same way I recommended King Kong versus Godzilla. Like, when I first watched this, I was like, I would recommend this over it. And, like, having stewed on that thought a little bit more, I'm like, I'm not sure I could do that.
Having dwelt in your shame.
I do think that this is, again, like, kind of an artifact. It's a movie that should be studied and looked at to kind of be like, oh, this is where we came from.
And not for, like, the filmmaking techniques anything like that.
It's use of tropes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's use in its the creativity.
Not even use of tropes. The
origin of tropes.
Of tropes.
Which kind of, I mean, it feels a little generic, but again, that's not the movie's fault. It's just because, like, this is where these started.
That's because that's where we
but
are
But we're
now.
Used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, a little fun fact to lead into what movie we're talking about next week.
Mighty Joe Young.
So, really funny story that we kind of were joking about this, and I figured it out, like, yesterday. So, this movie, one, if you are somewhat of a fan of G98, you should watch this movie. Just because, when you watch this movie, you'll realize that G98 is almost more of a remake of this than it is of Godzilla. Speaking of all that cyclical stuff,
yeah.
So, the next movie that we're talking about, which is
Gorgo.
Gorgo was his last movie, correct?
The last movie he wanted to make,
right? The director of this made Gorgo, and Gorgo was heavily inspired by Godzilla. So this movie inspired Godzilla, and then he saw Godzilla movies and was inspired to make another monster movie, which is Gorgo.
Yeah.
So and it's then this weird like.
Roland Emmerich saw this movie and was inspired to make another Godzilla movie.
I guess.
He was like, okay, I'm going to make this movie. We're going to call it Redisaurus. And they're like, nobody knows what that is. Call it Godzilla. And he's like, are you sure? I don't think people are going to like that. And they're like, Roland, babe, they're going to love it.
God, how much cooler would that movie have been if it, instead of it being Gino, it was actually the Redisaurus? Like, even if it was the late 90s CGI Redisaurus, that
then
still
would
have been so cool.
We wouldn't have gotten Godzilla Jr.
Huh?
From the cartoon.
Oh,
okay. So
yeah.
I will because he would have been Red Jr.
No, he would have been a Redisaurus cartoon.
He would have been Lil Red.
Been cool.
It wouldn't have been as cool. But
it wouldn't have the. Wouldn't been
I'm not trying to say Godzilla G98 shouldn't exist. It would be an interesting timeline that we would exist in if. You know,
I'm not saying Godzilla 98 doesn't have the right to exist. I'm just thinking about all the multitude of multiverses.
Yes.
Where.
Where G98 doesn't exist.
Where G98 is actually Redisaurus.
But, so anyway.
I mean,
yeah,
that's all I got to say about it.
Yeah, that's all I got to say. I think that kind of wraps it up, I think, unless Cameron has anything last.
No.
All right. So, yeah, going to do all the plugs here. Go to TokyoLivesPodcast.com.
There's the one.
Check out our website. We post all the articles. We're going to have some special articles coming up real, real soon for you guys.
Plug number two.
Then we got our Twitter, Tokyo Lives Cast.
Zing.
Search for us on iTunes. Just Tokyo Lives. Search for us on Facebook. It's Tokyo Lives. You'll find us on all those things. We love to hear from you guys. We're trying to be as active as we can with our fans.
Come on down to the Twitterverse and become my new internet best friend. Me, Robert New. Always looking for people to talk to.
But yeah.
Guys, he needs this.
I think that's it for today, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode about Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, and we will see you in about a week and a half when we talk about Gorgo.
Gorgo.
Yes. I'm so excited.
I'm excited.
I'm really excited. Man.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. I love you.
I'm leaving that in there. I'm leaving your horrified face.
Paul Hubschmid is the main dude.
Well, maybe that was his real accent.
He's Swiss. He's from Switzerland.
That's why it sounds so weird.
Jeez. Dude could not keep a single accent for...
I can't wait till we get to
I'm trying my best.
Oh, there's the post credit.
I'm dying.